College Basketball Insider.
Some news and notes from around the world of college basketball.
In-studio correspondent for WFAN and CBS Sports Radio.
Attention, please, to John Rothstein. Please report to St. Joe's.
The Insider's Insider.
Joining us now with his thoughts and to break it down, John Rothstein.
It's College Hoops Today with John Rothstein.
Let's put the women and children to bed and go looking for dinner. John Rothstein here on the College Hoops Today podcast. Later in this show, we will be joined by UCLA head coach Steve Alford. Want to remind you to subscribe to the College Hoops Today podcast on iTunes. We want to be your Bible for the college basketball season and beyond. We are the only college basketball podcast coming to you 52 weeks out of the calendar year. Also want to remind you to check out the College Hoops Today fan page on Facebook. Give us a like, give us a review. Let us know what you think of the product we're bringing to you 52 weeks out of the calendar year. And also send me your questions on Twitter. I'll get to them later in this podcast. I'm at John Rothstein. That's John, J-O-N. And I want to remind you that today's episode of the College Hoops Today podcast is being brought to you by Upstart. Upstart has revolutionized how we borrow money by going beyond the traditional FICO score to offer personal loans, taking into account factors like job experience and education when determining your interest rate. Checking your Upstart rate is free, and it has no effect on your credit score. Your Upstart rate checks just 2 minutes, and if you are approved, you can get your funds as soon as the next business day. They make it quick and easy for you. The path to financial freedom can look awfully bleak when you have high interest debt. And if your FICO score isn't great, it can make breaking out of that revolving debt cycle harder than it needs to be. Thankfully, our sponsor Upstart is revolutionizing the process of personal lending. Hurry to upstart.com/hoops to find out how low your Upstart rate is. Checking your rate only takes 2 minutes and won't affect your credit. That's upstart.com/hoops. And now that we've got you set for all your Upstart needs, I think we had major news in college basketball on Monday. Major news when you look at the landscape of not just the ACC, but the sport as a whole. Because the news came down about noon Eastern time through Virginia that Braxton Key, the transfer from Alabama, was ruled eligible by the NCAA per a waiver granting him immediately eligibility to play during the 2018-19 season. Why is this so important? You heard right here on the College Hoops Today podcast a couple of weeks ago when Tony Bennett was our guest, that the number one thing that Bennett was searching for when he looked at this Virginia team was a fourth perimeter player to play in closeout situations with Ty Jerome, with Kyle Guy, and of course with DeAndre Hunter. Virginia now has that with Braxton Key. I had the Cavaliers as a top 10 team entering the season. As I reconfigure my top 25, they are now in the top 5, and you better believe they are the team to beat in the ACC. And I am not going to fall into the trap of looking at recruiting rankings again and put a team like Duke ahead of Virginia entering the season. Not this year, not ever again. Because the biggest mistake that people make when you evaluate teams in college basketball prior to year is putting more stock on incoming players than returning ones. And the guys that I have mentioned for Virginia, Ty Jerome, Kyle Guy, DeAndre Hunter, Jack Salt, who also will play a major role again for Virginia, were all a part of a team that earned the number one overall seed in the NCAA tournament last year. I know that team lost to UMBC and were the one seed that was the team that was labeled a one seed for the first time in history that lost to a 16. But that team also won 17-1 in the ACC and won the ACC tournament. Virginia, to me, the team to beat in the ACC. And I want to stay in state right now because I was in Blacksburg last week and I saw Virginia Tech. And this is what I can tell you. Buzz Williams spent large portions of practice, and he told me large portions of the preseason on defense because Virginia Tech was elite offensively last year, and the key for them to reach their ceiling in 18-19 is are they going to be capable defensively? And the unsung presence for this team is Ty Outlaw. Ty Outlaw 2 years ago was, to me, the reason why Virginia Tech made the NCAA tournament because when Chris Clark went down with a knee injury, you saw Ty Outlaw step in, inherit his minutes, and really fit into the criteria the way that Buzz Williams wants to play. This guy isn't just a dead-eye shooter. It's like target practice when he squares his shoulders and looks at the basket. Fast beats big when fast is fastest. That's the Buzz Williams mantra. And I feel confident in saying this is Buzz Williams' best team at Virginia Tech. It's a potential second-weekend team out of the ACC. Now, what can we talk about when you think about UCLA? Because Steve Alford's going to join us in a couple minutes. I see Murphy's Law happening again in Westwood. I see a team that looked like it was going to start a season one way and is now going to have to reconfigure itself another way. And in a lot of ways, it's the same thing that happened last year, only under a different circumstance. Last year, UCLA had the embarrassment in China when LiAngelo Ball, Cody Riley, and Jalen Hill were all arrested for shoplifting. Obviously, LiAngelo Ball left the program. Riley and Hill did not play for UCLA, significantly changed their depth up front. And this year, Sharif O'Neal, somebody who a lot of people close to UCLA thought he would have been a potential starter for the Bruins, won't play this year due to a heart issue. He should be fully healthy and to have a regular career after sitting out the season. And Tiger Campbell, another top 100 freshman, who was supposed to be a steady hand off the bench behind Jalen Hands, tears his ACL. He's out for the season. So two players for UCLA that were thought to be in their top 7 or 8 are now not going to be available in 18-19. How does Steve Alford adjust, and what is the ceiling for this UCLA team, who, again, last year lost in the first four to St. Bonaventure, the year before lost in the Sweet 16 to Kentucky? Steve Alford, the head coach of UCLA, joins the College Hoops Today podcast to give us some answers on those questions coming up next. College basketball season about 2 weeks away from kicking off in 18-19, and obviously always at the epicenter of college basketball is UCLA, and the head coach of the Bruins is Steve Alford. He joins us right now. And Steve, you've been the head coach of UCLA since 2013, so the million-dollar question is, after 5.5 years in Southern California, do you prefer a good afternoon in Malibu or a good doubleheader in Indiana, where you grew up?
It's a good question. I love them both. Love them both. The 75 and sunny is hard to beat now that I'm 53, but obviously very much appreciate and know where my roots are, and very blessed that I get an opportunity to live here in the LA area and be a coach at UCLA. I feel very, very fortunate.
You know, Steve, you had a team last year that made the NCAA tournament, but the team that you wound up coaching was not the team that you prepared to coach when the preseason started last year. Just because of having to change your thoughts and your rotations on the fly, where does last season rank among the most difficult you've had to deal with as a coach?
Well, again, John, I think that's, I've said it, and I it's probably falls on deaf ears, obviously, when a head coach says it, but I was very proud of last year's team. Obviously, we would have liked to have gotten a better seed and would have liked to have advanced in the tournament. I didn't think we played very well, and I give Bonnie all the credit, because I thought they played. They had a great game plan, and they executed it. They did a tremendous job. So other than the ultimate finish to the season, you know, I thought that this team did a terrific job. We were picked to finish third in the league when we had full roster, and we lost three key opponents to that great recruiting class. And we did have a great recruiting class, and yet there was only three of those six that we actually play last year because of what happened in China. So I thought the team did a tremendous job of staying together, working, and really turning a tough situation into a positive. We would have just liked the season to advance a little bit further.
Now, for different circumstances, from a personnel standpoint, something similar has happened again this year. Sharif O'Neal, who was a, you know, top 20, top 30 freshman, isn't going to be available due to a heart injury. And Tiger Campbell, who was a very steady freshman at the point guard spot, tears his ACL. He's not going to be available. How much were they in your plans prior to their injuries in terms of being an integral part of your rotation?
Well, very much. And we've got Alex Olashinsky out until, you know, late in the year here or early January. Both Alex and Sharif gave us the stretch fours that could get out on the floor and shoot the basketball and And so we'll desperately miss those guys, and hopefully Alex gets back. And but with Tiger, it gave us a point guard who just a tremendous facilitator and can really pass the basketball. So we're going to have to wait a year to get him. So it just it adds pressure on, you know, now Jalen Hands is the sole guy, and he's got to do – there's going to be a lot of pressure on him to lead this team and set people up and be the orchestrator of what we're trying to do. And he's working very, very hard, and I think, you know, his future is going to be determined on just how he can lead. And I think that's exciting for him, and he's going to have to prove that because we do have the bigs and we do have the talent on the wings that we can provide a lot of help that way.
You know, Steve, you told me before you lost those two players, you know, to injury, season-ending injuries, that you thought this was the biggest team you had, maybe the deepest team that you had. With those two key injuries, how do you feel about the depth, and who do you see emerging as, you know, a second or third primary ball handler behind Jalen Hands?
Yeah, I think, obviously, our depth gets hit a little bit. We still have very good size. Moses Brown at 7'2", and then you look at Kenny at 6'10", and Cody Riley, who plays a lot bigger than 6'9". Jay Hill plays bigger than 6'10". So we've got good size up front. And then when you look at our wings, Chris Wilkes, 6'8", Chris Smith, 6'9", Jules Bernard, 6'6". We've got the size in the backcourt as well. And then David Singleton, as you alluded to, of who's that next ball handler, I think David Singleton – is somebody that is very steady as a freshman, doesn't make very many mistakes, hard worker, listens, can really shoot it and handle it. So he'll be somebody that's going to, with our depth getting hit some of these freshmen now, I think they were going to be in the mix, but now that mix, just their minutes should increase now because of the injuries.
You know, 2 years ago when you went to the Sweet 16 with Lonzo Ball, you had one of the great offensive teams that I've ever covered. You've just, you know, talked about your length and your options up front and on the wing. Does this team right now have the potential to be the best defensive team you've had at UCLA?
At UCLA, yes. I mean, we've had some good ones over, been blessed at some other teams and other places, but you're right. At UCLA, potentially, we definitely have that. And that's where we've got to make our biggest improvements. Last year's team was able to continue to be a pretty decent offensive team when you look at efficiency and everything else. We just didn't get the job done at the defensive end like we needed to. And this year's team, because of size and length and athleticism, I think we have the potential, if we continue to work, to be a team that's hard to score on. And I think we're going to need that so that we can get out into transition that way.
UCLA head coach Steve Alford joined the College Hoops Today podcast with John Rothstein. Now, every year there's certain players in college basketball that are kind of forgotten men, and then they reemerge. To me, Cody Riley is that guy, because a year ago when I was on, you know, your campus checking out your team,
right,
he was the one physically that you could tell, even though he was a freshman, was ready to impact college basketball. How right. big do you think Cody's impact would have been last year if he was eligible to play?
Well, I think both he and Jalen Hill are two guys that we really missed last year because of size, athleticism. We can switch five ways with both of those guys defensively because they can guard about every position. Jay Hill has a great feel of how we do things at the offensive end. And Cody Riley is a legit go-to guy in the post. And now you add Moses Brown to that mixture. We've just got some size that we can do stuff where it's pretty much on an inside thing, just been Tommy Welsh. Now we've got some multiple options in there. So not having them last year obviously impacted us, but I thought the guys responded this year. You know, we got to keep those. Hopefully those guys stay healthy because I really like what we're seeing out of both of those guys.
Who of your attorneys do you think is going to make the biggest jump aside from Jalen Hands and Chris Wilkes?
Well, I think getting those guys back, and that's what we've got to monitor here early in the non-conference, is that, you know, we got still good depth. We got 10 guys in that in that depth rotation, but seven of those guys haven't played. You know, we've only right now with our active guys, Chris Smith, six of them: Chris Smith, Jalen Hands, Prince Ali, and Chris Wilkes are the only guys back that have seen college minutes. So we've got to really watch that and be patient with that. But My hope is that that sophomore class that was very highly touted at coming in, now they're a full class. So I think a big, big piece of what we do is going to be what that sophomore class of Riley, Hill, Smith, Wilkes, and Hands, what kind of years they have. That's going to be pretty crucial to what we do.
You know, Chris Wilkes was somebody who showed great flashes last year as a freshman and, you know, is a bona fide candidate to be an All-American this year and Pac-12 Player of the Year. Your best team at New Mexico had a small forward in Tony Snell that affected the game in a multitude of ways and has played a long time in the NBA. I'm curious, how would you compare Chris Wilkes at this stage compared to Tony Snell?
Yeah, very, very good comparisons. And Tony was somebody that just continued to work and develop, which I think Chris is doing. And why it's fair is that they're very similar in size, probably both a little on the weak side physically coming into college, and both have worked very hard to increase that. And I think that helped Tony a lot making that next step to the NBA was he just continued to gain strength and confidence. And we're seeing the same thing with Chris Wilkes. He's about 210 now. He played just under 200 last year. So he's worked on his body. But both of them really understood how to move without the ball. I thought Tony was outstanding of having that kind of size of moving without the ball and being able to hunt daylight to get shots. And Chris does the same thing. So we're going to need Chris to do that because I think he's one of the guys on our team and throughout the league that a very capable high-level scorer, and we're going to need that.
Well, you're going to need that, and so is the Pac-12, because it seems like, you know, right now one of the constant things that we're seeing in college basketball is every conference wants to be ahead of the next. We've seen multiple conferences go to a 20-game league schedule. The Pac-12, I know, has toyed with it in conversations. Where do you stand just in terms of, you know, somebody who's trying to shepherd the conference ahead in terms of what would be the best thing from that perspective for the league to get the most representation annually in the NCAA tournament?
Yeah, I think, John, that's probably with a lot of the coaches in our league of there's just no data to support yet or not support if 20 games makes a difference in conference play. So I think that's why it's come up a lot in our league meetings. And I think where we're at, you know, as a conference, we're diving into it. We're looking at it. We're looking at all the data that's out there right now. And then obviously you got a couple leagues this year that are doing it. So I think we want to see just what that does. At a place like UCLA, it does potentially take away, you know, this year we're starting a home-and-home with Notre Dame, which I think is a great non-conference, tradition-rich game. But potentially we could lose that by extending it just because I do think there's a give and take on just how many Power 5 conference or non-conference games you play. And normally we play – we have the advantage of being able to schedule 5 to 6 Power 5 schools in the non-league. Not everybody in our league has that opportunity, and I think that's what we got to decide as a league, that even if it means a place like UCLA or an Arizona or an Oregon, now we have to play 3 or 4 Power 5 conferences in the non-conference and allow other teams in our league that don't have that opportunity, they get 2 more by playing extra conference games. I just think that's the discussion, and I think you know, I don't know if we're any closer right now more than we're just looking at data and we're trying to see what's going to be best, because ultimately we're trying to get as many teams from our conference in and then obviously work on better seeds.
Well, another thing too, though, and I understand that the way things are structured from a scheduling perspective is you have travel partners, but you're the head coach at UCLA, and the Pac-12's best rivalry is UCLA and Arizona. And I'm just saying this as an objective member of the national media. Right. The league suffers if these two programs don't play twice a year prior to the Pac-12 tournament. Do you feel that maybe making an effort to keep rivalries alive in a way that you can continue to build the metrics in your favor is something right. That when the league does make a change, it's something it has to do.
Right, and that's been on the table as well and very well documented of just rivalries and the way it's worked out over, you know, X number of years of Arizona and UCLA. I think it's happened now, well, maybe three of my 5 years, if not more, where we've only played each other one time. So, and that's not good. So I think that's something that is being looked at, and obviously those chances drop for that happening when you're playing 20. That would be a positive with that matrix of a schedule. So I think they're throwing a lot of that against the wall to see what's going to stick and what's best. But you're exactly right. That's a hard one when we only play once a year.
UCLA coach Steve Alford joined the College Hoops Today podcast with John Rothstein. So, Steve, you've had some time to sample right now coaching in Westwood. How does the fishbowl of UCLA compare to the fishbowl of both Albuquerque, New Mexico, and being a star player at the University of Indiana for Bob Knight?
Yeah, very interesting, John. I think what I've learned, this is a pro town, and that's what's kind of been exciting for me, because everywhere I've been, whether it was Indiana as a player or my coaching stops at Manchester, Missouri State, Iowa, New Mexico, those have been college towns. And so I think they're all different. You know, most college towns, it's that fishbowl is 24/7, and most of them are smaller towns and smaller communities. And, you know, there's give and take in all of it. Where a place like UCLA, it's basically the 6 months that you're on, because in the 6 months you're off, there's so much else going on, from the entertainment business to the music world to what's happening with having 10 professional sports in your city. There's just so much going on. So it always varies, but, the bar is just such at a high level. Other places I've been, they've been very, very special places. It's just the bar is not nearly set at the height that it is at UCLA, just because of there's just been one Coach Wooden. So
right.
That's a little different. I guess the if there was an equal comparison, it would be as a player at Indiana, just because of what Coach Knight had brought to that university and that community, and how he changed so much of the atmosphere. And just high school coaches start going to man-to-man defense and motion offense because of Coach Knight. So there was a lot of pressure as a player there to try to do the things that other players before me had done. And I think you feel that as a player when you were under him as well.
Well, you've alluded to the expectations at UCLA. And look, you guys have went to three Sweet 16s in the last 5 years. But considering the expectations and considering the team you have, what in your mind do you think makes this upcoming season a positive and successful season at UCLA?
Well, and we talked about that. You know, we've got one team, we've got one chance, we've got one mission. And really the mission isn't about wins. It's not about, you know, how far we can go in the tournament, because I think every year, especially here, it's, you know, you want to try to win them all, and advancing in the tournament and trying to win a national championship, trying to win a Pac-12 tournament and championship, that's always going to be goals here. But our mission is just to try to where we're at now and be the best basketball team that we can be each day. And if this team can really grasp that and learn and each week, each day get better, then the time I think we get into January, February, and March, we're going to be a really difficult team to play against. But we've got to gain that experience, because we're a pretty inexperienced group right now.
Other than health, and obviously that's been a big factor, that and keeping guys obviously on the floor, what do you think are the biggest X factors for this team to be in that situation in late February and March in terms of playing its best when it matters most?
Yeah, I think what I've mentioned first is the sophomore class. I think that sophomore class playing like seniors. And that's not going to be easy, because two of those guys didn't play at all last year. But you need that. You know, when I've looked at some of these teams over the last 4 or 5 years, even being in a one-and-done era, you know, teams that have that experience in March, it's hard to duplicate. And so I think that sophomore class, it starts there. How the freshmen can continue to grow and develop, that's going to be huge. And then I think, you know, an X factor like a Prince Ali, what he can do. He was a 10-11 point game scorer last year. Can those numbers get up 3 or 4 points and be a solid defender for us? And Alex Olashinsky, our only other junior on the team, when he gets back, what he does with his experience, I think those are going to be guys that can end up being a pretty important piece of what we do as well.
Steve, final thing. You dealt with expectations as a player at Indiana. You're dealing with expectations as a head coach at UCLA. In the dialogue that you have with Coach Knight and the dialogue that you had with him about dealing with expectations, because before you guys won a national championship, he had already won two. What are the principles and the lessons that he specifically taught you in that area of the game that you still apply and are going to apply with this team at UCLA?
Well, I think Coach was the best at that. And one of the things that I thought he was always a master at was taking the pressure off players and putting him on and putting it on himself. And I've kind of learned that from him in coaching as well, that you just try to alleviate. And it's harder. This era, I think, is even harder because of social media and everything else that players are always looking at. That the last thing we want is any kind of self-doubt or non-confidence type things seek into our players that, you know, if they can see me trying to handle the pressure versus them and just allowing them to play at both ends freely, that's something that's a positive. And I thought Coach Knight was a master at that. He always showed his team, though there were days where it was tough love. We've got days like that as well. But the guys knew how much he cared, and I think that's why they worked so hard for him. And those are always traits that I've tried to learn from Coach that I try with our teams as well.
Steve, appreciate a couple minutes. Looking forward to covering your team. And as always, we'll stay connected along the way. Thank you.
John, I appreciate it. Thanks a lot for having me on.
We'd like to thank UCLA head coach Steve Alford for joining the College Hoops Today podcast with John Rothstein. I want to remind you to subscribe to the College Hoops Today podcast with John Rothstein. We want to be your Bible for the college basketball season and beyond. We are the only college basketball podcast coming to you 52 weeks out of the calendar year. Also want to remind you to check out the College Hoops Today fan page on Facebook. Give us a like, give us a review. Let us know what you think of the product we're bringing to you 52 weeks out of the calendar year. And also want to remind you that the College Hoops Today podcast is being brought to you by Geico. Did you know there is a quick way you could save money? Switch to Geico. All it takes is 15 minutes to find out if you could save 15% or more on car insurance. And Geico offers coverage for more than just car insurance. Got a motorcycle? Geico's got you covered. Got an RV? Covered. Got a boat? Covered. How about homeowners or renters insurance? You bet Geico's got you covered. Go to Geico.com today and see how much you could save. That's Geico.com. And time now for our social media portion for the College Hoops Today podcast with John Rothstein. Send me your questions on Twitter. I'm at John Rothstein. That's John, J-O-N. And our first question right now on Twitter, and we're getting more and more of a response on this as we inch closer and closer to the start of the season. You can tell by the interest right now that Bet College Basketball is inching closer. And our first question right now is going to be from Indians fan 21, and it's John, how much do you see Braxton Key affecting DeAndre Hunter for Virginia? And look, I think Hunter and Key are going to be a seamless fit for Tony Bennett. Smaller is the trend and more skilled is the trend in college basketball. I think you're going to see a lot of that again for Virginia. And, you know, I would not be shocked if once again Virginia wins the ACC is in a scenario where they're competing for a number one seed in the NCAA tournament. Again, in my opinion, the ACC going through Charlottesville. Our next question is going to come from Howling Lion, and it's John. Give me your impressions of what you saw from Washington in Sunday's charity exhibition against Nevada. Now, truth be told, the exhibition game was not streamed. I was very adamant about that. I felt that all these exhibitions should be streamed and available for the public. I talked to Mike Hopkins on Monday morning following Washington's win over Nevada. And remember, Noah Dickerson, an all Pac-12 first-team caliber player, did not play in this game. And Mike Hopkins just feels that he has a veteran team and a team that, for all intents and purposes, Nevada could not guard. Now, Eric Musselman said that in the post-game press conference, but Washington is the type of team right now that you see really reflecting what I was talking about, experience matters. Washington has 8 guys back from last year, a team that beat Arizona, beat Kansas. Washington has concrete role allocation. Washington has depth. They have guys who understand the system. This is what you're getting right now when you have a known commodity. This is the example. They go into Nevada. They don't have arguably their best player in Noah Dickerson. They go, they win the game by 18 points, and they're confident. Our next question comes from West Virginia fan Jacob R., and it's, how do you feel about the Mountaineers this year, John? And look, West Virginia under Bob Huggins is going to be a system team, a team that obviously turns the ball over for their opponents time and time again, forces turnovers, is going to be great defensively at the rim with Sagaba Kanate, somebody I voted as a first-team All-American. My concern with West Virginia is in the backcourt. Brandon Knapper finally trying to get healthy. Beadle Bolden, James Bolden, taking on a bigger role. That, to me, is the million-dollar question for West Virginia. I don't anticipate West Virginia being quite as good as the past 2 years when they went to the Sweet 16 in back-to-back years because they don't have Javon Carter, they don't have Daxter Miles. Now, we've got you set with all your social media needs. Let's get to some nuggets.
Five good nuggets.
Five.
Six.
No, five. But you were close.
Nugget number one, closing time. The biggest question for Kentucky right now, who closes out games? I'm dying to find out if things are tight on November 6th against Duke. Who does John Calipari have finishing games for Kentucky? Well-embedded moles in Lexington right now raving to me about Emmanuel Quickley's ability to shoot the basketball. Could he be Kentucky's starting point guard against Duke? Had 18 assists and just 2 turnovers during the team trip to the Bahamas. Meanwhile, nugget number two, Beale Street Gauntlet. How about Memphis's non-conference slate from 11-13 to 12-15 at LSU, home against Yale, 3 games in the Advocare tournament in Orlando, a neutral site game against Texas Tech in Miami, South Dakota State at home, UAB at home, and Tennessee at home. That's a heck of a stretch. Nugget number three, the calm before the storm. St. John's has the best roster in the Big East, in my opinion. They're a bona fide top 25 team. But St. John's has not put together a quality non-conference schedule. Their first quad one opportunity may not come until January 1st against Marquette. That's not good for St. John's. Nugget number four, Jordan's jump. Jordan Nwora averaged 14.4 points per game for Louisville last year. In the 5 games, he logged over 20 minutes. Expect Chris Mack to feature Nwora at the four for Louisville this year, just like he featured Trayvon Blewett at Xavier. Nugget number five, Crimson Rising. How about this? Over the weekend, I was informed by a source that Boston College beat Harvard 92-91 in a secret scrimmage. The game went to overtime. Bryce Aiken and Seth Towns, the two best players for Harvard, did not play. They're still being held out of the lineup for precautionary reasons. What does it say about the ceiling for Harvard if they can play an ACC team? I know it's a scrimmage, and score 91 points without two players who will be first-team All-Ivy League. That says a lot to me about the ceiling in Cambridge this year. We'd like to thank UCLA head coach Steve Alford for joining the College Hoops Today podcast with John Rothstein. We'll be back next week, same bat time, same bat channel. This was the College Hoops Today podcast with John Rothstein.